I was living in my car at one point, so I invested way too much in the wrong things, in wrong courses. I bought this real estate course for 15K and saved 30K for a property, and it was all a scam. Like, that started me off in the wrong way when I was like 19. I went to the petrol station one day and I was like, I need to train. I looked at myself in the mirror, not shaven, overweight, not feeling good in myself, not moving. Like, it was just not a good feeling. I just messaged every single person I knew, I met, everyone, asking for closing roles, asking for selling, because I realized if I was to work as a chef again, yeah, 60K a year. How long will that take to pay off $68,000 debt? So I needed to like dramatically change my income. That was my first thing. I got really good at closing. That was my thing. Really good at selling on the phone, selling different offers, like 5K to 25K. That's how I started selling for all types of people and services. Then I started doing sales training. I realized there was more problems. It wasn't just selling. It wasn't just sales. It was more so marketing, systems, operations, people, culture, all that stuff. So then now what I do is I go to a business and I help them scale and scale efficiently, effectively, with sales, operations, systems, training, recruitment. Basically, my best sell is I go to a business and kind of take away having an ops manager, taking away having a recruiter, a sales manager, a sales director. At the moment, I'm working with the biggest brands in the world. I'm working with 8-figure brands, 9-figure brands, and I just do everything with them and for them. And that same hunger I had back then is what I have now, because I'm afraid to go back to the same point ever again. That's my biggest driver now.
So Adam, how are you, my friend?
Incredible. Thanks for having me, Brad.
That is good. I'm very happy to have you, mate. I think today's going to be a fun chat.
Yeah, likewise.
You're very entrepreneurial. Like I see entrepreneurial and I see very entrepreneurial. You're one of those guys. And I think for a lot of our audience, The majority of them are entrepreneurs, small business owners. We've got quite a few business leaders of different types that tune in. But I think there's a lot to learn from you. There's a lot about you that I think if we can get under the hood, we'll get some value, mate. So you good with that?
Well, let's do it.
Yeah. All right. So quick introduction from me, but I don't want to do all the talking. I want people to hear from you, my friend. Adam is a guy that's been on a great journey, and currently a lot of your focus is on done for you sales training and implementation with all sorts of organizations. And specifically what I found really intriguing about you is not just what you've done, but how you've done it. Right. And I'd like to get under the hood, mate. But maybe just to give everyone a bit of color, a bit of the Adam story. If you can take us back to before this agency existed, before your entrepreneurial journey all kicked off, so people can understand the color that paints who Adam is.
So it all started when my dad shook my principal's hand and he said, "You're expelled." That's when it all started. If you want to go that far back.
Yeah.
But man, for me, it was like I left school, no clarity, no purpose, not really having an understanding of like what I want to be doing with my life. And then, man, I got into cooking at 15. I worked at a leagues club out the West. And man, it was like the worst experience of my life. It really was, you know. But then when I was just turning 16, my dad gave me a birthday present. He said, "Do you want to work at a restaurant called Rockpool? Let's go there for lunch." Mate, no idea who Rockpool was, no idea what a Michelin star was or like a hat or anything. So I went there and mate, it was amazing. It was phenomenal. I got a job there. The chef came out to me and said, "You know, you're here. We're looking for an apprentice chef first year. Let's get you started." So I started my cooking career. Then I was starting to, you know, go up the ranks in like a Michelin star level. So I was working at restaurants like Rockpool, Noma, Attica. I worked with Heston Blumenthal. I worked with Grant Achatz from Millennia in Chicago. And when I turned 18, 19, I was like, "Mate, what's next? Like, I've literally done all of this now, worked with the best chefs. I cooked for Eminem, like all these random things." And I was like, "Man, there must be more to life." But most people, that's enough. Like, you know what I mean? That's like a whole life.
It's a whole life by 19.
I mean, 100%. So then I was like, there has to be something more. So I started doing Tony Robbins events, started like really networking with some really great people. Then I fell into private chefing. And I was cooking for billionaires on super yachts, traveling all around the world, cooking for the really successful rich families in the east of like near Bondi. And then, man, I started getting really great at selling and closing. But I think it's always been natural for me. You know, with all these gigs I've had, I've always been able to present myself in such a way to get the deal across, if you would. I've just changed my vehicle in the last, you know, 8 to 9 years.
Very good. Well, I'm going to squeeze that a bit more. So before we jump into like sales land and business land, let's just go back a little bit to that sort of 16 to 19 phase, because I think this helps people understand how you think about what you do. And as I've got to know you, this is what I've found really intriguing, is you found yourself, dad gave you the bit of the leg up into the first quite a profile type environment, right? But you clearly had a hunger, an ability to keep capturing attention from other people, right? Tell us a bit about that. How did you move through these amazing restaurants? How did you start to get in these situations where you kept coming up to, you know, being able to cook for M&M is everyone gets that opportunity. And it's different. And it's different, it's unique. Mm. And I know you don't see it from the point of view of, I guess, sucking up to M&M per se, but you see it's an interesting opportunity that not many people get to have.
Man, I think for me, it's like never being complacent. I'm always looking for that next thing. That's the thing. I'm always looking to build relationships with people. I'm always looking to connect with people. And when I meet these type of people, it's always about like leveraging like what I know. And it's just going that step further. Like, for example, when I was at Rockpool, I met this guy called Ben in Melbourne. And made that whole facade of being with him, I just wanted to like obviously be different to everybody else. So I put my hand up and I said, I'm going to work with you for free. I didn't get paid for it for 3 months. So not many people would do that. They look at like the dollar figure of the hour. Like I took that step forward to make it happen, if that makes sense.
Mm. You know, as you've explained things, Adam, I'm becoming more and more curious around how you're wired, right? And there are all these, experiences moving between restaurants. You talked about that a little bit, but there's something more to it. You're clearly making certain decisions at that age that were very different to a lot of your peers.
Mm.
So tell us a bit about how you were thinking back then that might have been a little bit different or unique to your average 16, 17, 18 year old.
Man, that's a good question. For me, it's like, it's really simple. I feel I had no fear. That's what it was. If you like, I wouldn't feel hesitant or I wouldn't feel fearful to go up to go speak to someone who I knew, you know, was a millionaire or a billionaire or someone who was like a higher level stature than me. You know, when I first met someone like, let's say, Renee Redzepi, and I was working at Noma, there was no wall between there. There was like no feeling for me to be like, oh, I can't speak with him. And I kept that relationship strong, which led me to work on a boat with him afterwards as well for a day. So I just kept being forceful in that way. I wasn't afraid of taking a risk. I think that was a really big thing for me.
Yeah, okay, interesting. So when you look at someone like Renee, let's use that as an example, right? And people say, oh, well, I've got no fear. So to me, a lot of what underpins fear is, you know, things like judgment.
Yeah.
Things like, will I be rejected? What's the story that's in your head? And we might lead this into sales in a moment, but what's the story that's in your head before you start having those conversations?
If to answer that question the best way, I think the origin would be even better. So for me, like living with my dad, my stepmom, growing up in a kind of an abusive family, it led me to a point of difference in my mind because I wasn't scared of the outcome because, for example, I would do whatever it takes to get out of a situation, you know? So I wouldn't want to go home and she's yelling at me, throwing chairs at me, all this type of stuff would happen in my life. So that's the worst thing. I lived a really like bad upbringing. So that's the worst thing. So what could it be if I just speak to someone? Like what would actually happen? What's the worst case scenario? Because it's not that bad. I always think to myself now, like when I speak to people, like what's the worst thing that can happen? What's the best thing that can happen? Because normally the worst thing is normally just in someone's mind they've changed their reality of what could actually happen. If you go want to speak to a girl or a guy, you look at them and be like, oh, they're going to say no, they're going to say no, they're going to say no. Mate, they're going to say yes. And if they said no, who cares? So I think it's that fear of rejection I don't have. I'm just ruthless with decisions. I'm ruthless with taking action in business, life. I was actually chatting with my partner about this yesterday. She's a reflector, if you listen to Human Design. And for her and me, we are so different together, you know, in such a great way. We complement each other very well. I just take action all the time, do everything. And she's more of like, she needs time to make a decision, which is perfect because sometimes my decisions are too rushed, like just no time. So I think it's all about balancing that for me. So that's what led to obviously the decisions I made today when it comes to business, working in restaurants, working as a PT.
Mm. So there's this interesting story just to build on that, right, where you took action, but you did tell her, you told me a bit about this offline and I wouldn't mind you sharing this with the audience because I think it's a pretty cool story. You had a billionaire reach out to you pretty early days to basically become the private chef for a period of time. And you thought it was a scam originally.
Thought it was a scam.
But tell us about this story because I think people will find this very interesting.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. So I was working as a private chef and PT for about 10 different families in Sydney. And I was making, you know, good money, 4 to 5K a week. And then someone found me, like a captain from a ship. And they called me and said, I've got this person. He's looking for a chef. He's looking for a PT. And basically they called me and then I said, what's this about? I was building my brand, but my brand wasn't that big. So they called me up and they took me all the way to Brisbane. And mate, I was cooking for this family. It was just that story in itself was, it's insane. If I could reflect on that and be like, look at that whole contrast of where I was to where I'm now as in that story, it's another level.
Well, tell me more. Like, tell me, you got interviewed, how did it work?
So I got to Brisbane, they picked me up, they took me to the shipyard and they said, you've got to cook for 12 people tonight. And here's the card, go to the shops. And I first thing, like thinking, what's the budget? No budget, just impress them. Cool. So I went back to the house and then I just like literally prepared everything. There was crew running around everywhere, people, like, you know, crew, staff, the family. And I got to the point where I went back to the house, I cooked this most amazing meal and they said, you're hired. I cooked, I don't even remember what I cooked.
Do you remember what it was? Yeah.
I think it was a really good pasta entree, like a very good pasta entree, like handmade. It was like a lobster for main course. Well, I'm vegan now, so I don't really have too much of that stuff.
But you came in strong.
Of course, came really strong.
So that was that, that reeled them in.
I reeled them in.
Let's like go a bit deeper.
Let's do it.
So you got interviewed, surely. What, like, how did it all work out? What happened when you turn up there? What's it feel like? Just take us through that experience.
You know, it doesn't feel real, man. That's the thing. Like, one second you're in Sydney just living your life, and then all of a sudden you're in this whole new life, right? And then there's new people around. There's billionaires, there's a family, there's workers, and it's just like, it blows your mind. So for me, it was like when I got there, just like it's a whole different array of life where I was living in Sydney to go to Brisbane. And then, mate, you know what? That's what I'm saying before. I don't put like a wall between me and them. So I was always being too open with them. I was always talking with them and I was always sharing like stories with them. I was trying to like, you know, gain their trust. So I went to the shops, they gave me their card. I bought all the food, went back to their house. What was in the house they were renting, the crew were renting. And I just made this amazing meal, pasta, lobster. We sat down and they said, mate, you've got the job. The captain told me. And I said, cool, what does that even mean? What's the next steps? You know, we're leaving in Fiji in a week. Mate, that was literally the words. And I shredded my mind. I was like, yes, I made it happen. I didn't think about, I have to go back to my house in Sydney.
Yeah. And all your other clients.
Yeah, literally. So I hired a guy called Toby. He was working for me. And he was basically cooking all of my meals, managing my clients. Some left me, but that's okay. He was managing like a lot of my clients when I was in Fiji in Sydney. So things did kind of work out, but man, it was definitely an experience, that's for sure.
Yeah, bloody hell. Right. So let's fast forward to now. Mm. Let's start to talk about what you do now. And I think we're going to learn a bit about you along the way anyway, because that's a big part of what this is about, Real Talk Without Performance. We want to get into understand how you built and how you think about situations, because there's so many parallels that other people can draw out of that, right? But let's fast forward to sales and implementation of scale. There's a lot in that, and a lot of people will be very intrigued about this, particularly those who are business owners listening. Tell me about your business. Tell me what you've learned. Tell me how it all works. Let's unpack it.
So I got really good at closing. Post-chefing, I got really good at closing, at selling. That was my thing. Really good at selling on the phone, selling different offers, like 5K to 25K. That's how I started, selling for all types of people and services. Then I started doing sales training. So then I was thinking to myself, like, when I work with a business, I was doing closing for them or selling, I realized there was more problems. It wasn't just selling. It wasn't just sales. It was more so marketing, systems, operations, people, culture, all that stuff. So then now what I do is I go to a business and I help them scale and scale efficiently, effectively with sales, operations, systems, training, recruitment. Basically, my best sell is I go to a business and kind of take away having an ops manager, taking away having a recruiter, a sales manager, a sales director, and I just do everything with them and for them. So that's why I charge, you know, startup revenue share. But at the moment, I'm working with the biggest brands in the world. I'm working with 8-figure brands, 9-figure brands. And for me, there's a huge demand there with businesses. So it's really great, actually. People come through my training to work with me in sales, and I put them in different accounts, and I put them in different accounts that I've partnered with, plus my own sales training as well. So
there's a lot in it.
There's a lot of
moving parts.
Yeah.
So tell us, give us an, you don't have to tell us the name of the company, but give us an example of what it looks like to get an organization to scale. I mean, I'm lucky that I get the chance to work with our clients on this as well, and our team get the work on it. But yeah, I guess from the point of view of you being under the hood and doing that as opposed to an advisor, tell us what it looks like. What's the give us an example.
So one of my best clients, we're making like 500 plus K a month at the moment. And what's really great about that, when I met him, I think it was like 3 to 4 years ago, he was charging his mindset, psychological shift. He was charging, you know, 1K for his offerings. Now we're charging 25K, you know, with the same deliverables in those packages. So I think one is mindset, one is psychological shift. From the owner, I think with what they know, it would only take them so far. You know, that's why they need someone to help them. So, you know, like I was running really successful businesses before with these people and everything was on WhatsApp, like just for communication. So like having the right communication channels, having the right training, like all of these things, these people don't know. And I think if you can equip a business with what I know and put that into someone, into an organization, it just takes off in a whole new direction.
Well, let's squeeze it a bit harder because there's so much in that.
Of course.
So let's look at the first stage. So you talked about the mindset and then you talked about this shift from $1,000 or roughly a grand for a particular service to $25,000 for fundamentally the same deliverables. Now, there's parts to that that I'm imagining in that, which is how you frame the offer, who the target audience is.
Of course, yeah.
So there's practicalities and then there's how the owner thinks about it, right, to know that there's actually value there. So how do you help someone go on a bit of a journey of reframing that? Tell us what you go through.
When I work with someone, I always tell them it's going to be uncomfortable because I just take reins. Like it's very hard for me to work with someone and they have a business and I'm always having to try and sell my idea on them and for them. I just say, look, just trust me, trust the process and we'll get there. So I said that to him as well. I said, mate, your prices need to change. Everything needs to change. So when we started developing the offering together, it's like, I think the most important thing is the mindset around the offering. People don't see value in what they do enough to charge what they charge or what they want to charge. The best way to double a business's profit, I believe, or revenue is to double their prices. And a lot of people, they undercharge. Or don't have enough value to add it actually in the offerings, whether you're selling educational programs, consulting, business coaching. Like when I started off, my first sale for my own business was $150 a month. And I was the person's PT, their mindset coach, their sales trainer. Mate, I was all of it. You know, now I'm charging like 35K, 50K, 100K.
Yeah, nice.
What I do, you know?
So tell us about your personal experience. So to go from $150 per month to what you've just described, what was the shift for you?
I think seeing myself more valuable. I think like just when I just do more things and I create more value myself, like I'm just always adding more value to my pricing. You know, I just think, I don't think I went through a shift, to be honest with you. I'm not too sure. I think I just closed, like at that time in my life, like what I knew, I just charged what I thought I could charge.
Yeah.
But now actually to like charge the amount I'm charging now, I think it was just, I'm not too sure. I think I just
did you experiment? Because I'd imagine. I
experiment a lot.
Yeah, because I'd imagine if you're at 150 and you go, well, this is not a very good life.
Of course.
This is not a very good place to be. I'm not actually even getting out of bed in the morning excited anymore I'm working harder than the return I'm getting.
That's right.
So I'm sure that equation would have gone through your mind. Or did it?
So I was running ads back then. And I made one sale for 150 and my next person I charged 3.5K. And I didn't change anything. I just changed the price I was telling them. That blew my mind. So I was like, I called Richie. I closed Richie for 3.5K. And the sale before that was Flo. And I charged him 150. So I think that helped me develop my skill set in closing, but also understanding the value of what I'm actually doing. I think if you charge less, people don't value you for what you're truly trying to do. Like he was paying me $150 a month. I was his everything. And like he was calling me, messaging me, he was abusing it. Now people pay a lot more for me. And it's just like a direct process, like one call a month, one call a fortnight, you know, outcomes. I think you do everyone a disservice if you don't charge enough, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, I have this saying in our business, if you don't charge enough, people don't pay attention.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And that attention and that relationship actually helps you ensure that those boundaries are in place. Tell us about, you know, 1 hour. When in the equation in someone's mind, you go, oh, you paid $3,000 for an hour. That's a lot of money for Adam. Like, you know, how do you frame that in a sales conversation?
For the person?
Yeah. Well, how do you get to the point where someone's prepared to make those sorts of bets on you?
So if someone comes through cold and we don't really know much about the person, like I've got like 1 hour to basically add a whole new perception of what they think of me on that call, and which is true, creating authority on the call. So I do like this whole technique. I give stories. I kind of elevate their whole perception. Like I had dinner with Jordan Belford a year ago, and he teaches the 3 tens, you know, myself, company, product, you know, got to be, have them at 3 tens. So it's kind of the same thing on calls. They need to get to a certain level of like trusting you, trusting the product, trusting yourself, trusting the offering. So, I mean, to answer your question, for me, it's just like charging 3K or charging 150. It's all about the return that they're going to get. You know, I think I could have charged the same person 3.5K, but I didn't believe in myself enough, I guess, at that time, or I didn't see the value of what I was actually giving the person. That's why experimenting is so important. Most people, they try and perfect everything before they actually start. I just did everything. Like, I never said no. I said yes. I still say yes. If you ask my team, I'm always saying yes. I'm always putting my hand up first. I'm always leading from the front.
Yeah.
I think that's very important in business, or in life in general.
Yeah. Well, I think there's stages. You know, I like the yes, and I think for me there's a lot of yeah. value in yes. But then there's these other challenge with yes, which means,
yeah,
geez, I've got a lot on now. And going back to yes on a $150 client versus yes on a $3,000 yeah. client, they're very different yeses, and they require, you know, judgment around, you know, how, now that I've said yes, well, do I pull back and say no because it's no longer serving me?
Mm.
So where, you know, if you're a yes guy, where do you say no? What are some of the, where do you put the line in the sand?
I think more around time management. I think like I'm really good at energy management now. So I would pre-frame it. Like if someone calls me, I would say, I've got 1 minute to talk. Like, quick, what do you need? Like, I'm very direct as a person. Like, outcome, tell me the outcome. Yes or no? Yes, yes, no, no. And most of my people that work below me and work with me, they're the ones making the decisions for me, like that lower level stuff. So the things that actually come to me when it comes to business, with life, even my relationship in a way, you know, it's always, I don't need to make many decisions with what I currently do. But when it comes to podcasting, when it comes to anything, I'm always just saying yes, because who knows? Like, I don't want to create this preconception of what it's going to be like, because I just have no idea.
Yeah.
When I said yes on that phone call, I had no idea what to expect. So I was in Fiji reflecting on it one time. I came back drunk after, you know, going drinking with all the crew. And I was just sitting there, and I had like Larry Page's boat next to me, Michael Hill's boat next to me. I was on this boat, and I was like, man, this is insane. This is insane. You know, and I think that in itself, that compels me to keep saying yes, because if you start saying no and start saying no too much and too often, especially if you're broke, you have no money, no time, no partner, nothing, like, you just got to say yes. Yes, yes helped me heaps. I'm not Jim Carrey, man. I'm not the yes man. I'm not trying to pitch being yes man, but I do like saying yes a lot to
yeah,
a lot of things.
Yeah. Well, yes when you know it feels good. Of course. Yeah, of course. I like it. Because there was a point you were broke, right?
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
Tell us about that.
I promise I'm not crying. I'm just sweating. I was living in my car at one point. So I invested way too much in the wrong things, in wrong courses. I bought this real estate course for 15K and saved 30K for a property, and it was all a scam. Like, that started me off in the wrong way when I was like 19. Then I bought all the Tony Robbins courses. I was in Fiji with Tony Robbins, and he was still going to Fiji actively. So I spent a lot of time and money on the wrong things, to the point where I kept living in this false reality. So I had all this money. I thought I had all this money. I was like, I was going to be okay. But I kept like pushing my debt to a side. So I didn't actually acknowledge I was in, you know, minus $68,000 debt by the age of 19. Like, that's crazy, you know? So I got to the point where I went to my dad's house and I said to him, mate, I don't think I'm okay. Like, the first step of vulnerability, like, I don't think I'm actually doing that well. And he says, how much debt are you in? I have no idea. I have no idea. He says, let's write everything up on a whiteboard. So imagine this, you know, sitting down with him, just, oh yeah, I got this one, 3, 4, 2, 60. Oh, dude, it's a lot of money. So then from that point, me and him went on the best terms. So I started living in my car in Manly. It's not that bad if you think about it. Manly Beach, sunrise coming up. Like, it's not that bad.
There are some benefits, yeah.
Of course. So I was living there, and then all my belongings was at someone I was renting before. Like, they wouldn't give me my belongings back because I owed them 4K for rent. So I literally had nothing. I had like some boxes in the back. I was sitting in my car. And for me, the biggest thing that shifted my life was because I kind of lived in this world. I kind of normalized it for a bit. Living in my car, meet someone, living in my car. Oh, that's cool. Like, I actually started to create my identity around it for a bit. You know, that was me living in my car, living in my car, living in Manly. That was my line for a bit. And it was to the point where I went to the petrol station one day and I was like, I need to train. I looked at myself in the mirror, not shaven, overweight, not feeling good in myself, not moving. Like, it was just not a good feeling. I need to train. So I went to find a cup because I had my pre-workout. I want to put my pre-workout in the cup to start going back to the gym or just trying to go for a run. Went there, mate, all my cards declined. I couldn't even pay for a cup because the guy left. He's like, oh, you need to pay for the cup. I couldn't even get the cup empty from the Slurpee. So I had to pay for the cup. Nothing worked. Mate, got back in the car, looked at myself, did the whole like, you know, cry, scream. I wasn't feeling good. I listened to this song called Spirit Bird by Xavier Rudd. Went to the beach. I mean, I sprinted, dude. I sprinted. I remember Tony Robbins says, like, change of physiology. Man, I was just fucking running, dude. Like running, trying to feel better myself, trying to feel better myself. Came back. And then I started going crazy. Like, I just messaged every single person I knew, I met, everyone, asking for closing roles, asking for selling. Because I realized if I was to work as a chef again, man, you know, 60K a year, how long will that take to pay off $68,000 debt? So I needed to like dramatically change my income. That was my first thing. And that same hunger I had back then is what I have now, because I'm afraid to go back to the same point ever again. That's my biggest driver now. Healthy, I'm not too sure. This isn't a healthy podcast, but you know, like that's still driving me today.
Interesting. That's a very powerful story, mate.
Thanks, bro.
Very powerful story. You made a comment before you were spending money on the wrong things.
Mm.
You know, and then you sort of said courses and you said Tony Robbins things. And some would argue, oh, Tony Robbins is great. You know, well done. You got involved in all that sort of stuff. Why was that the wrong thing at the time?
Because I kept going. So I... Like people, I love personal development. I love spending money. Like I had this guy called Andy Elliott on my podcast and I paid for him for an hour coaching. It was 25K USD. I spent money, you know, 4 months ago on that. So I love spending money on the right people. Tony Robbins, he changed my life, dude, in so many ways. But the issue is, like, there's a lot of courses out there and most things we don't really need if you think about it. Like you got to be really focused. Now I just buy courses for myself now that take me to the next step. But when you start going online and start scrolling, I mean, everyone's marketing to you. Everyone's trying to get you into their new thing, especially the whole biz up market, right? Consulting, coaching. So people spend so much money, man, on the wrong things. That's why when I sell, man, it's integrity. Like you have to sell with integrity because sometimes people don't need the thing you're selling them. And then sometimes I'm talking to myself on a call. Do I really need that program? Is that really going to help the person, right? I think salespeople in this industry, they lose that touch, man. They lose it.
Well, that's it's the reason why I asked the question. Yeah. I think there's been so many cases. I was talking to someone the other day and they were going to this AI program. I said, well, what's the value in it?
Yeah.
What's the measurable return you want from it? I'm not saying not to go. The question I'm asking is, what are you going to get from it? And what's, if you do focus your attention on it, how do you extract that, right?
That's right.
And that's so often forgotten. It's almost like there are some people, and I apologize if this is you listening to it and this is part of your DNA, but there's an addiction to almost I call it edutainment, being edutained. Rather than doing anything with that education, they're sitting there wanting to be feeling better about themselves because they're in a room with other people feeling better about themselves.
Yeah.
Is that something you've noticed?
I do. I do notice that a lot. Especially this, I spoke to this woman, I think it was like 2 weeks ago. She came through one of my ads and she just said, I'm doing LinkedIn, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing all these things and nothing's working. Hey, these people are confused. Like, I think technology has confused people. You know, like I just got really good at sales and selling and I just got really good at systems operations. Now, I keep in my lane now, you know. I think people are still trying to find their lane online. There's a lot of things out there. It's confusing. It's very confusing for people. You know, so when I sell programs, it's just like I'm really trying to find out that's what the person actually needs. And that's truthfully. A lot of sales trainers, they would say that. But, man, when I speak to these people and I train my teams, like I'm talking to myself if those people come on the call with me. I can't sell myself something that I didn't have back then.
Well, that takes integrity, right? And that's what a good salesperson has. But I'd imagine, and let's just look at your business for a moment, that there are certain clients that the offer they have or the thing they're selling, you and your team might make a judgment that that's not the right thing to be doing for your business or it might actually be just difficult to sell. Tell us about what it means to have a saleable offering in your opinion and something that you and your team could actually stand behind? What does that look like?
Some offers I sell at the moment, man, I've got no idea that, like the logistics, the features, the benefits. But what I know, they get a result for the client that pays. You know, I don't think, because I run a successful sales agency, I don't think it's possible for me to know every single account, client, what they sell, how they sell. But when I partner with people, the first thing I ask them is like, what's your actual results? What's your client success? You know, because there's nothing worse than putting my team, my systems and everything into a business to spread more poison in the world, if you would, you know? So when it comes to a saleable option, I think it's very simple. Problem, solution. That's how I like to tie it together. They're very basic stuff, right? But a lot of people, they try and sell a problem or try and help them with a problem. They have no real solution, you know? And it's just like they're taking someone's money. There's a lot of that stuff going around, yeah, as totally. You know. Yeah. You know what it's like.
Yeah, you know.
A lot of that stuff going around. So for me, partnerships are very important. Like I've got 11 really great accounts at the moment, and all those partnerships, man, it's just like great people, great businesses, great services. And there's a really great, you know, like problem solution offering. I think that's very important when you start working with these people.
I agree. And I think there's a lot to be said about analyzing that and understanding that. There's a lot of the clients we work with, because the offer is not clear around the solution or the solutions being developed, the sales offering, the sales process itself is broken, right? It's like the two go hand in hand. Tell us about what you notice around the different ways that sales can be carried out, right? So if you think about a discussion, right? There's different ways a discussion can be had or a sales conversation can be had. There's different stages that warm someone up to be ready to have a sales conversation. What do you think is effective when it comes to sales conversations, and what are some of the ways that you think do not work?
I think the best way that I train my people and I train myself is I don't like when I sell people, because obviously we do volume, you know, like some of my guys that do 12 calls a day consistently, you know, like big, like 5-6 figure days. So it's really important to understand when you're speaking with someone that the actual model of like lead to sale is really dialed in. So a lot of people, they like, there's a lot of trainers out there teaching this type of stuff now, but for me, it's like they need to be already sold before they actually start. Before you get into the pitch, before the offering, there needs to be that marry of the value of what we provide and also problem that we're solving. Really important. But also, depends what you're selling, they need to believe in themselves enough to get the result. A lot of people have no belief in themselves, you know, so they're going to give you every objection. They're going to give you everything because they don't believe in themselves enough to actually get the result, you know, in what you're promising, or believe in you, or believe in the vehicle to get them there. You know, I look at sales this way. Like if you're on one side of the lagoon and then you've got a bridge, you're holding their hand, you're guiding them across the bridge. They need to believe in you. They're going to take them across the bridge, that the bridge is not going to break. And what's on the other side of the bridge is actually what they're looking for. Most people, there's no bridge. There's no person guiding them. They're just trying to take money from their pockets, which is not good. Yes. You know, I've been on too many sales calls with people trying to sell me stuff that I don't need, especially recently. They're trying to sell me things. I mean, there's no connection. There's no connection. There's no value. There's no problem. Hey, what are we doing here?
Tell us an example of the worst sales pitch you've ever heard. Give us something that you're like, right? Tell us about, like, and again, apologies if you have been the giver of these sorts of sales offerings, but
man, you know what?
Tell us about a bad one.
It's actually last week. It's actually 2 days ago. The worst sales call I've ever heard was on one of my newest guys joining one of my teams. Man, the training, there's one upsetting call. He goes straight for the kill. Like what actually happened, dissecting it. His central acuity, he wasn't like listening to the right things in the person. The prospect was clearly uneased. Like he doesn't want to be on the phone call. And he just keeps going, like trying to hard sell him into something. But the biggest question is he didn't even know what he wanted. So there's no real connection. There's no problem. There's no problem that was understood. There's no value. There's no solution. And he's just trying to take money from him. It was like my quickest fire I've ever had in my life. I hired him. After 2 days, he's gone. If he's watching it, I don't think he watches, but if he was watching it, it's a good lesson for him. It's all lessons, man. I think what's important in the space, especially in business and in sales, you need to have those lessons, because for me, it wasn't easy. Like when I was working at Rockpool, my second day, man, I got drilled. Like I had a knife go through my hand. I had the larder, there's a cold larder section in fine dining. He took me to the cool room and he just started throwing lettuces at me. Like, man, I was like, it was intense, man. I was addicted to cocaine when I was 18. Like, my first time I tried it was when I was 17. It was just a normal thing to do. Wow. You know? So, like, but that stuff is my lesson. In selling and sales, man, these people are very, they're not tough skin in this new industry. They don't get it. So I feel like for me, why I've become so successful, I'm only 30, you know, in the last, you know, 10 years is because I've developed this tough skin when I was 14, 15, 16. That's the shape of what I've done now.
So tough skin, and I can get that. You had the School of Hard Knocks, and we grow. I'm a little bit older than you, but you go up with these experiences of where, you know, things that were said in the past, if they happened in workplaces now, you just wouldn't see it. But the thing that I find really interesting is it's not just the hard knocks, right? Like, you know, clearly I would imagine, and tell me if I'm wrong or right, you've got a salesperson, you would have a sales system. Mm-hmm. You would have a framework for how you hold a conversation. Now, someone can choose to follow that framework and use that.
Yeah.
And I don't imagine it's not a pure script or anything, but a framework to help engage someone and appropriately hold that conversation and decide to opt out if it's not the right type of person or prospect. But yeah, what do you think is the difference between, you know, the smarts and the learning from someone that's already got a structure that works versus being tough?
I think the biggest thing is it's very it's intangible stuff we don't see in people. Like I hire people a lot more in intangible things. So hunger, desire, like tough skin, you know, like those type of things. When I look for someone, I hire in always those things, you know, integrity, honesty, transparency. Because those things, when you find them out in the long term, they suffer everything. So this person, man, he came in highly skilled. He thinks he's highly skilled. He told me everything I wanted to hear. And man, he just didn't follow a single thing I told him, you know? And then he just starts screaming behind my back, starts doing all this stuff. And man, it's hard to be successful with those traits. It's very hard. Like when you start feeling like the world owes you something in life, man, everything comes down. Like in my experience and what I do today, I wake up every single day and I think I have no money. That's kind of my thing. I don't wake up grateful. I am grateful, but I don't wake up, you know, meditate, breath work. I don't feel grateful. I wake up and man, I literally feel like I'm starting again. That's where I get this hunger from. And honestly, that's where I get my hunger from. That's why I can work from 3 a.m. till I think 11 p.m. at the moment.
But it sounds like you don't have to. So why have that narrative?
Mate, that's the brain surgery thing, man. I'm not too sure. I'd love to sit down.
We have to get in there and open it all up.
Maybe we can all sit down with my psychotherapist, man. We can analyze it.
Yeah.
I'd love to, man. Honestly, like it's one of those things, you know? It's just I put weight on my shoulders. That's just how I operate. That's how, and people model me. Like my team, my guys that work with me, they model me. Is it healthy? I'm not too sure. But I've got big goals.
But it works
for
you.
Vision. It works for me. Exactly. Mm.
So, you know, that's probably a good segue to another phase, right? Mm. So you're clearly still learning, right? And you've got bigger goals. What are the vulnerabilities in Adam that as you move forward, you're working on to become a better leader, to become a better businessman, to really level up?
Like blind spots, if you would?
Well, yeah, it could be blind spots. It could be things you know that you go, okay, well, I'm good at this, but I'm perhaps I need to work on X.
Ironically, I don't stop. That's the thing. So that creates burnout. I'm currently doing cryotherapy 3 days a week now just to refresh. Like my recovery game is really lifted. So it's definitely vulnerability. And it's definitely not, that's one thing, and it's definitely not stopping, but it's also prioritizing and balancing. That's something for me I've always struggled with. You know, 3 years ago, really busy, very stressed. I was in hospital with heart palpitations because I could not breathe. I was so stressed. You know, got out of hospital, that was a wake-up call. Got back to the gym, got back to eating healthy. So I feel like for me, like it's really trying to marry, you know, health, relationships with my beautiful fiance. It's trying to bring everything together in harmony as I'm working. Because I can easily just work and forget about everything else. When I was working at Nomad, it's a 26-hour day. There was no life for me. Like I create life in my work, in my business, in what I do. So that's one of the biggest blind spots for me. It's trying to really bring that together in unity with what I do for work.
Yeah. And do you have any thoughts around the tactics to shift the dial there?
Man, if I did.
Still working on it.
I mean, look, to be honest with you, I think I'm now matching my health with my same traits in business. So I'm doing like recovery every day. I haven't missed a gym session since I got back from Brazil. So I'm always doing these things in order to kind of compensate from what I'm doing for work and matching it. Because I've been burnt out like far too many times.
Because it's interesting, there's so many people that have had in that chair that have said, the big lesson has been looking after myself first so I can give back to others or give back to the business that I'm growing, right? So it's an interesting awareness at, you know, at that stage of your life.
Yeah.
Do you feel better for it? It 100%. Sounds like you're training 100%. Every day, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. What sort of training are you doing?
I do F45, so I do group training.
Yeah, beautiful.
I do group training. I do the oxygen chamber 2 to 3 days a week. It's just like sitting in the oxygen chamber, like pumps you with oxygen, and you just feel amazing afterwards. I do an O2 chair, which is like you lay back in like a vertical position, massage on the back, meditation, oxygen, and you just chill for half an hour.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, I didn't know it was a thing.
Yeah, I actually didn't realize. I've been in the chamber before. Yeah. There you go. All right. So interesting question I'm about to ask, which we asked quite a few guests, but this is, this I think will provoke some good story from you, given the different phases of your journey. What's something you've changed your mind on? What's something that you've gone, that wasn't very, and I'm not saying, you know, simple tactics, but I'm talking about a genuine philosophy in your life about the way you think about things, about the way you attack business or the way you attack decisions that you make.
I think the biggest thing I changed my mind on was, I think, going in one direction. Does that have to be in business now or can be in business?
Could be in any stage.
Yeah. So when I left Noma, and I was like, this is the peak of my career. Like, I've got the best resume, I still think, in the world. Like, if you really think about it, like, worked at all these Michelin star restaurants before 20. So I was like, do I keep going down this way? And I wanted to keep going. I wanted to have a restaurant. Actually, I got shares in a restaurant at one point. Like, I wanted to go down that whole restaurant space. But then I changed my mind to go into becoming a private chef and a personal trainer and get studied for that. So that was my biggest change, because I started thinking, man, I'm living my life. I'm making okay money. Like, you can never make more than 200K a year, I think, as a chef. So it's not really that much in my mind in today. So if I kept going down that route, I needed to create some more freedom. And business was the way that I saw that freedom to be created. So that was something I just changed my mind in a split second. I'm going this one direction. Yes, I want to be the best chef in the world. But then if I did, how much did the best chef make? And when I met Rene, I met the most amazing guy. Faithful, you know, trust, like, he's such a cool guy. Oh man, he's burned out. He's like 18-hour days, man. Like, repeat, his wife, his kid, beautiful family. So I saw that and I saw me and I'm like, mate, if I keep going the next 10 years, I'm going to be 30 and it's not going to look pleasant.
Yeah. You know, in the restaurant game, yeah?
In the restaurant game.
Yeah. But it's interesting because you still work hard. So it's not the hard work you were afraid of. What was it that you really wanted? Was it the more money? Was it the more freedom?
More money, more freedom for sure. Freedom is a big appeal. Like, freedom's a big thing for me. Like, I'm going away for 3 days after this podcast. I can just do it. You can't do that as a chef. It's having a boss. It's asking someone for time off. Like, when I create my own business as an entrepreneur, like, I want to leave from the front. I travel all around the world. I was in Dubai for a month, Fiji for a month last year, Brazil for 3 months. You know, like, I love that ability. I could never have that much time off as a chef. She struggled to get Saturdays off, man. Like, it's not what I want to vision for my life, you know?
It is a big change.
It's a massive change.
And to do that in a split second, was there anyone around you that was stimulating you at the time? Was anyone, any experience that said, oh, business, man, is over here, mate?
Yeah, all the chefs, when I made the decision, man, they kind of gave me doubt. They just said, because it's not common. It's not common at all for a chef to go from like a chef, private chef, into a sales agency, into working with the biggest brands. It doesn't make sense for the most people that are chefs to think that, right? So as I was progressing into that, all the chefs, they would doubt me. They would say, like, you're not going to be literally, you're not going to be successful. My mom, I had a call with her today. She was actually crying. She was like, I'm so proud of you. She's never said that to me before. When I left the kitchen, she was like, are you sure? Like, you've just built yourself such a great resume. You've done all this stuff. Like, now what are you going to do? Mom, I have no fucking idea. I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to do something, because I kind of vision my life for the next 10 years and think about someone like, you know, Renee or these other chefs who are very successful, but the quality of life is not there. So for me, it's like I can wake up, go travel with my partner, live a different life, make a lot of money, help a lot of people, change a lot of lives. Cooking, you don't have that impact. You're behind the scenes. I'm an extrovert. You know, if I'm behind the kitchen all day, I never get a thank you for my things. Not that I need a thing. Not that I need validation, but I'm not front of house. I'm not client.
You're not connected to the customer.
No connection. You'll go a whole day without talking to anyone. It's like a Vispana, you know, but in a kitchen. So that's like, it just didn't agree with who I was as a person.
I think there's a lot of self-awareness in that. It's good to pick that up.
Yeah.
And that's partly where the no fear piece comes from. Probably as we head towards our end of our conversation, I'd like to think about your learning. You've learned a lot. You've had a go. You're still learning. Everyone's still learning, in my opinion anyway. But who are some of the mentors you've had that have given you the best education, let's call it, where they've given you either wisdom, you know, direction, advice, that has then propelled you to the next level? Are there a few examples you could share?
Of course, man, of course. When I was 14, I was like 105 kilos and I was so big. So when I went to the gym, I was like 17, 18. I was like, man, I need to train. I need to lose everything. I sat in a chair and I was looking for a personal trainer. Someone came up to me, a guy called Jason. He was my first mentor. He said, I can be a PT for you, but I also want to be your mentor. I just feel like there's something in you. And I was like, wow, okay. So I started paying him $150 a week or $200 a week or even more. And the lessons he gave me were so crucial because he has a successful gym chain. He owns a lot of successful gyms in Sydney, Melbourne. He's quite a big guy. And when I sat down with him, he changed my mindset so much. In business, in everything. I paid for one session one time. I think it was like $250. I went to the session and he said to me, what is your outcomes? And I said, man, what do you mean what outcomes? He's like, well, thanks for the coffee. That's going to cost you $250. Next time, have your outcomes ready. Man, that's still with me today. I never go to a meeting. I never have an agenda without having my outcomes. Like reflecting on what he taught me in such a 2 to 3 year period, that was the biggest change. Then I stepped from that into working with Renee. And simple things, man. Like I was at the restaurant one time, and part of NoMa is like when someone comes to the restaurant, everyone stops what they're doing and they run to the front and just be like, hello, welcome. Like, you know, thanks for coming here. This is NoMa. I mean, like everyone says hello, wave. For me, I didn't wave. I didn't say hello. I just didn't say it. He pulled me to the side and he said, man, if you F this up for me, mother effer, like I'm going to take you down. You cannot be here. What the fuck? Went back, man, I sprinted, I screamed, hello, how are you? Like, I'm here. Man, that taught me things. Like every mentor I've had, I seriously believe there's so many pinpoints for my growth in little things. I reflect a lot when I work with a mentor, paid or not paid. I think even the ones that aren't paid, like a really good friend of mine today is a guy called Dean, and he helps me so much, man, in relationships, even just awareness and stopping, you know? Like sometimes I'm in it too much, just stepping away from a decision and just looking at all perspectives and all parties, like little things in my mind that I've learned, not just even from mentors, from reading books, man, I'm just heavily learning in the right things, I believe.
Well, those two first examples were kicks up the bum, weren't they?
Yeah. But at the time I was like, man, I was like, what do you mean? $250 for what? You know, like where's the session? But then now it's like, I do that for people as well. If someone's late to my call, I just charge them. It's a value I have now, like punctuality. I mean, I'm very punctual, you know. I was here on time today. Probably I wasn't late, you know. So I'm very punctual in all areas of life, in business, in relationship, in health, and all of it. So these little traits that I have now that are so predominant to me in my life, they all came from a mentor.
And just if we zoom in on that just for a moment, being punctual, what's the benefit in that for you, in your opinion?
Man, it's a can of worms. Because my beautiful fiance, we're different in a way. Some people, if you're very spiritual, you're thinking time isn't important, you know? For me, it's kind of that thing, right? So for me, punctual is like being on time. Like someone pays for me for an hour. If I commit to a time, I'm going to be there no matter what, you know, because I'm showing value. Like they're waiting for me. I don't want to keep you waiting. That's a really big thing for me in business and everything. I had one time at a meeting with someone in person. He was 10 minutes late. I wasn't there when he came. He messaged me, are you here? Like, I was there, but you're late. You know, so I don't know. I love your opinion as well. I feel like if someone is late for something that I organize with them, that they don't value me enough or value what I'm doing enough in order to, like, be on time. I just feel like it's strange.
Yeah. Well, look, I echo that value piece, but I also think there's a couple of pieces for me. One is a respect.
Respect.
It's a message it sends.
Yeah.
It sends a message that my time is more important than yours. That's right. Because I can do whatever I want. Yeah. And you have to turn up at the time that we agreed. And there's this relationship there that I think some people, and including myself, you know, associate with time and punctuality and the appreciation for the other party in that. And I think that comes up a lot. And you think about working in partnership with someone. Now, a couple of minutes later, you know, that doesn't rub me the wrong way, but I think it's the way that we approached someone's time and the value of it. And I think the second piece for me is that time is finite, right? Mm-hmm. We all have the same amount of time in a day. And, you know, a good one of my mentors years ago said, well, Elon Musk or company, I think he used Bill Gates. Bill Gates has the same amount of time as you, Brad. So what are you doing with it, right? So, again, I'm not Bill Gates and I don't intend to be, but the idea is that you get a choice on what you spend your time with. So if you're going to spend it with someone else, that's fair to do that and turn up and be there ready to rock and roll. Now, it's interesting because I also have a respect for the way your fiancé sees time. You seem to have a respect for it as well. What's your respect for that? What do you see in that idea of what your fiancé brings to the table?
Yeah, like we collaborate a lot with different ideas. That's why I think we stretch each other in the best ways. I think we complement each other in the best ways as well, in business, in life, in relationship, in spirituality. Now, before I met her, I wouldn't have that understanding at all. Like if someone's not late, if someone's on time, mate, they're done. What's worse than wasting their time is bringing my time with them to waste both of our times together. I hate that stuff. But with her, she's not really, it's very more in flow. You know, time's an illusion, right? To some people. Power of now, you know, like I'm here, aren't I? Like, at least, like I understand both sides of it. Because I went through a spiritual game before as well. Like I've really opened up in the last, you know, 10 years spirituality as well. Like going through different awakenings with myself, which I highly, highly rate. And I've worked with a lady, she was used to be Tony Robbins' energetic healer. Like she would literally travel all around the world with Tony Robbins and do energetic healing on him. And she was doing energetic healing on me and like people around me. But that was powerful.
What's energetic healing? Can you tell us about that?
Cool. So you basically lay down. It's called like an energetic alignment, she calls it. You lay down on a table and she just calls all this energy to you. And you just, I can't explain it. You just start like screaming. You start yelling. You start going up and down. You literally be behind you. It's like kind of like a condensed Reiki. Like it's powerful. Like you'd put energy in your spine and you start doing this without even touching. She wouldn't touch you. And afterwards, you wake up, or you don't wake up, you feel like you wake up, and you've got no thoughts. There's no thoughts. No thoughts, complete bliss, one with everything. Powerful. For me, I see psychotherapy. I love healing myself. With her, it's like I had this thing with my dad and everything, and I went there, and I never processed it energetically. Emotions are still in your body. You know, energy is energy, emotions, emotion, right? So, for me, I never processed that until a point where she did something with me. It was like four of us on a table together, like three of my other friends, and mate, everything just came out. It was anger, screaming, fear, and then I never feel that feeling again. It's powerful. Equip that with business. Like I feel like, you know, with my hunger, I'm not driving with an empty tank. I'm driving with a place of like fullness with values. A lot of entrepreneurs are just like hustling because they don't want to feel good enough. That's what they are driving away from, right? Or they're not going to be loved, or those limiting beliefs. I don't have that stuff, man. I'm just driving. I work crazy hours. I'm unhealthy in some ways, of course, but I'm not coming from a place of lack. And I think when I work with people, my team, they see that. I resemble that, and that reflects onto them as well.
I can certainly see that in you, mate.
Thanks, brother.
Yeah. Tell me, if we were to sit here in, say, 5 years' time, what would we see in your opinion? What do you think we'd be discussing?
The true level of entrepreneurship, man. I think just like the whole like scaling businesses for sure. But I think in 5 years from now, it'd be like what we can create, co-create, like vision, like business. You know, I think we both achieve a lot in your space, in my space, like in such a short amount of time. 5 years, man, is a long time. I like 1 year for me is a lot of things that I do and accomplish. So 5 years will be like more impact, gratitude. Like I donate a lot of money this last week and like homeless people giving things away. I feel like philanthropy for me is going to be something I'm going to start to really embody. You know, like my church, I'm always donating to things to like the better needs. So I'm trying to always embody that in business as well. So I'm always, I don't know, man, I'm trying to integrate that business with my, that and also giving back contribution. That's always been something for me to always contemplate on. How I can like combine contribution with business together, because that's the true feeling of growth. That's why I love sales, man, because if I'm selling something, which I do, that's powerful and help someone break through in their life, like I'm literally like the breakthrough point for them. You know, they're stuck, they have a call with me, they're unstuck in whatever way, if it's consulting, business coaching, sales, whatever. So it's like my moral obligation to sell that to the person to help them transform.
Yeah.
That's why I love sales, because for me, it fulfills me in contribution, growth, giving back.
And do you think you'll still be in the sales game?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it, man. Yeah. It's something for me, like I stepped away last year for a bit, like more managing and leading, itching to get back into it. So now I'm back into it.
So on the tools.
On the tools, man.
Yeah.
100%.
Very good. Very good. Well, Adam, we've been on a bit of a ride, haven't we?
Yeah.
It's been fun. Are there any final thoughts to share?
I think for the audience listening, I think a lot of people have this misconceptions around selling and sales, and there's obviously a lot of resistance around selling and sales and everything. I think if you're just well-trained and you know how to sell efficiently and with integrity, and more importantly, like help someone transform their life, you should really open up in learning how to sell. I think if you learn how to influence properly and to communicate with people properly, it's going to really serve you. I think that's the truth.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are very prone to pushing away sales, pushing away a salesperson calling you like, oh, that person's calling me, what do they want? But it's more open and we understand communication better, influence better, and selling better, I think the world would be a better place, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't need to be have a negative reputation, does it?
Yeah.
I think sales can be, as a career, amazing. And I also think your business will not thrive without it, and particularly for some of those in that smaller stage where the sales function isn't as well developed, or those with a less robust sales function, it's a no-brainer to get right.
So,
mate, it's been awesome. Enjoy it. What's on next?
Off to Jervis Bay. Going to go switch off, man. I'm going to try my best to switch off. Relax, chill.
Try your best. I'll
come back on Monday.
Operative word.
Yeah, of course.
All right, Adam. Well, mate, it's been good fun. Enjoy Jervis Bay. Thank you for today. I think there's been heaps in it, lots of little gold nuggets. Your story's amazing. And, mate, I think you'll inspire a few people to have a crack given where you've been at. So thank you, mate.
Thanks, brother.